Okay, it is November the 2nd. We continue with our creation class. We are in Parashas Vayishlach on page 180. And we just finished the encounter between Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov is heading home, trying to get back to Yitzchak's house. And we are up to Pasuk Yirches, verse 18. Vayavo Yaakov Shalim Ir Shechem. Yaakov came complete to the city of Shechem. Asher Be'eretz Canaan, that is in the land of Canaan, Bevo Omi Padan Aram, when he came from Padan Aram. Vayichan as Pnei Ha'ir, and he encamped on the face of the city, which means outside the city. Vayichan as Chalkas Hasadeh, and he purchased the portion of the field Asher Nata Sham Bahalo that he pitched his tent there, Miyad Bnei Chamor Avi Shechem, from the hands of the children of Chamor, the father of Shechem, B'meyah Kesita, for the price of 100 Kesita. Vayatzev Sham Mizbeach, he put up there an altar, Vayikra Lo Kel Elokei Yisrael, and he called it the Kel, the power, Elokei Yisrael, the God of Yisrael. So this is the summing up, the summation of his traveling away from Lavan and coming back to Eretz Yisrael. And we see some curiosities here that we need to discuss. What does it mean that Yaakov came complete? Vayavo Yaakov Shalem, he came complete near Shechem to the city of Shechem.
With everybody, with his family.
Okay, and his whole family. Didn't lose anybody.
Maybe he healed from
His wound,
and
correct?
So he didn't lose any Torah when he left the house.
Okay, he didn't lose any Torah. He remained steadfast in his righteousness.
He had all his things.
Didn't lose any money.
Well, but didn't he go back for...
Right, and he retained, he kept everything. He didn't lose anything. Everything was complete. He had everything that he needed. He was a complete person, complete family, complete spiritually. Everything was good. To the city of Shechem, that is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan Aram. Why does the Torah have to stress to us that he came from Padan Aram? We know where he was coming from. After all, we've just studied several weeks, months, about how he had this whole sojourn in Padan Aram with Lavan, and now he's coming back, and he has this whole encounter with Esav. Why does the Torah have to stress that he is coming from Padan Aram?
Actually, I don't have an answer to that question, but I just wanted to make a comment before. If it says that he's complete, the biggest thing was, it seems to be, encounter with the case of Moloch. And the fact that he came complete, I mean, that really, he has legitimately the birthright. That's the big deal.
So you're suggesting complete, meaning complete with the whole episode with Esav, he came out on top.
Yeah.
Everything.
Officially.
Right.
Because he did it before, but now it's official.
Even Esav has capitulated. Okay, very good. Excellent. Excellent.
So, Padan Aram represent the antithesis of common in terms of godliness and common as righteousness and so on.
Okay. So the Torah is stressing the fact that despite the fact that he was coming from Padan Aram, he was still completely righteous. He was complete, even though the place he was coming from, Padan Aram, would not have lent itself to remaining complete. Okay? And he encamped outside that city of Shechem. He purchased the portion of the field where he pitched his tent. Has Yaakov purchased any land before? I mean, I imagine that he's been traveling for a long time. He's been traveling for 2 years. It means that he has pitched his tent in many places. Why over here does he purchase the portion of the field?
Because he's ancestral, and just like Abraham purchased Maaseh Chana Pela. It doesn't signify ownership. Maybe he's going to have in the future.
Okay. So Yaakov here is now in Israel, where he wasn't before, and now he is purchasing a place. We talked about it with the Maaseh HaMachpela. We talked about Abraham purchasing that place. What is the significance of purchasing a place?
Permanence.
There's a certain permanence and ownership a certain permanence. Shechem is one of, we know that all of Israel is important and all of Israel is special, but Shechem is one of the most significant places in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, there are only a few places that really stand out as being the most important historically, biblically. And what are they?
Hebron
is one.
Teria,
Tzfas, Shiloh, Yerushalayim, Shechem. Beersheba. We find that there are only three places in Eretz Yisrael that were purchased. I mentioned this to you when we spoke about the Maras HaMachpelah. That three places in Eretz Yisrael were purchased by our ancestors. One is the Maras HaMachpelah, Hebron. The other one is here, Shechem. And what is the third one? The hint is it was purchased by David HaMelech, by King David.
Yerushalayim.
Yerushalayim was purchased by David HaMelech from Arav Na'ayavusi. So these three places were purchased. It seems that, well, with Yerushalayim, it's obvious that this is true, but it seems that our ancestors understood and knew, were aware of, the spiritual significance of these three places. And therefore, they wanted to make it abundantly clear that they are ours. And they not only relied on the future inheritance, but they actually purchased the land from whomever owned it at the time. Shechem has its first mention here. We will find that Shechem has great significance throughout the years. Who knows other things that take place in Shechem? Yosef's sale is in Shechem.
And later the
Yosef is buried there. What else?
Dina.
Well, Dina, we're about to have, right, the story of Dina.
No,
only bad things.
The Aaron trial before came to Yerushalayim with David, no? Wasn't
Shechem? No, not Shechem.
Shechem.
Not Shechem.
Shechem.
What's that?
Was that with the spies? Or, I know, what am I thinking
of? Yericho?
Yeah,
not Shechem. Not Shechem.
Who's Hebron? Oh,
Hebron. Yeah, that would be Hebron, right. Right. Now, there are a bunch of bad things that happened, as we've already mentioned. There's another one that happens in Shechem. The kingdom is split in Shechem. Later on, after the reign of David and Shlomo, later after that, when the kingdom splits with Yerovam ben Nevat, that happens in Shechem. Yes?
I have a question. You know, if I were a lawyer, and I would say, okay, David purchased this, Abraham purchased that, and okay, so we'll give up, you know, we might consider that their land, but the rest is ours. So,
yeah, she's saying the Arabs.
You know, right. So
ironically, you know, ironically, it's the reverse. The three places that they don't want to give us are Hebron, Shechem, which is Nablus, and Yerushalayim. If there's any places in Eretz Yisrael that they hold on to tenaciously,
I don't understand that. Because Hashem said at the very beginning, I'm giving you the Torah, this is all your land. You're going to conquer it. Well, eventually you're going to conquer it. So why, I don't understand that discrepancy. Like, why is he buying it? He knows. Hashem said, this is going to be your land. Why are they purchasing
it? I imagine to remove all doubts. I think that's the simple meaning. There's a deeper understanding, which is when you purchase something, it is yours more significantly. When you pay for something, then it means more to you. Mm-hmm. You know how it is.
If I were a lawyer, I would say, okay, fine, you know, you purchased it, but you know, the rest is not yours.
But even these three are the ones they hold on to even more than anything else. I think these three are the keys. I think these three are the keys to the spiritual significance of Eretz Yisrael. These are the ones we want more than anything else.
The Shechem also, we have a Sordina coming that happens.
Yeah, we're going to have that as well. There is an important event that happens at Shechem, which is described later in the Chumash, and that is the whole story of Har Gerizim and Har Eval. The whole story where the tribes go up the two mountains and they accept the Torah for a second time when they enter Israel, that takes place in Shechem as well. So the Shechem is a very, very pivotal place, as we'll see as we go along. It is tied up very much with Yosef, and as we know, Yosef is buried there, as was mentioned before. And so we'll see as we go along where Shechem, how Shechem plays a role. So Yaakov purchases it for 100 kesita, which is an exorbitant price. Now, one more point on that verse. He purchased the place that he pitched his tent from the hands of the children of Hamor, the father of Shechem. Is that a little funny way to say it? He bought it from the children of Hamor, who is the father of Shechem.
Usually it's the opposite, because it's father and the children.
Well, I'm not worried about the opposite. I'm worried about how it's a little bit awkward.
Sounds redundant.
Yeah.
He purchased it from the children. It would be like saying yes.
Is it because the people of Shechem didn't have respect for their parents, and that the children were mean and they put the parents down?
Well,
priority over.
It doesn't say.
Not necessarily well, parents.
It's not that the Torah is not drawing our attention to any disrespect over here. It's who he purchased it from. The Torah is just describing who they are. These people who he purchased it from were who? They were the children of Hamor, who was the father of Shechem. Now, if he was the father of Shechem, then Shechem is also one of the children of Hamor.
Right,
so it's a little bit, it's just an awkward way to say it. In addition, the name of the city is Shechem, and the name of the child of Hamor is Shechem. So he named the city after his child, or he named his child after the city. We have a precedent for this.
Haran.
What's that?
Haran.
Haran.
The city is called Haran, and the person is called
Haran.
Haran.
But we do have a precedent in last week's parsha, Parshas Bamidbar. In Parshas Bamidbar, it says, we can turn back if you'd like, but it says that Cain had a son named
Shem.
No, Shem was Noah's son. Cain had a son named Chanoch, and he built a city. And he called the name of the city Chanoch in the name of his son. We can look back very quickly just to see that.
But does the name mean something?
It means shoulder.
Shoulder?
Yeah. It means shoulder. Well, we'll see later about the name of the place Shechem. If you want to see this, I can read it to you, but if you'd like to look at it, it is on page 22. Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17. Vayeda Kain es ishto v'atar v'atelet es Chanoch. Kain lived with his wife, and she became pregnant, and she gave birth to Chanoch. Vayehi bona'ir, and he, Kain, built a city. Vayikra Shem Mahir, he called the name of the city Kishem Beno Chanoch, like the name of his son Chanoch. So then we have a precedent to naming the city after your son, or naming your son after your city. Here, Hamor seems to have done the same thing. His city, which it seems to be it's his city, we'll see, he hasn't been introduced to us yet. He'll be introduced to us later as the. Well, we know if Yaakov is buying it from him, then he must be that he owns the place. But he's the prince of the land. It's his area. And his son's name is Shechem, and the city's name is Shechem. So what does it say about this son?
He must be important. Maybe the first son.
Okay, so he's apparently a very important son. Maybe he's the heir to the throne. So that's Shechem. And we need to know about Shechem, since he's the one who's going to molest Dinah. So that's Shechem. So the important thing over here, though, is that he purchased it from the children of Hamor, the father of Shechem. So Shechem must have been an important person. The name, the city and Shechem have the same name. But more than that, if Rabbi, okay, we have a good example here. If Rabbi Emanuel Feldman comes to visit in Atlanta, so those of you who have been here for many years would say that Rabbi Ilan Feldman is the son of Rabbi Emanuel Feldman. Those who have moved into the city recently, when Rabbi Emanuel comes to visit and someone says, who's that? They'll say, oh, he's the father of Rabbi Ilan Feldman. As your reference is the one that becomes the from whom everybody else is known. So if the Torah says they bought it from the children of Hamor, now who's Hamor? Oh, he's the father of Shechem. So that seems to indicate that Shechem was a more famous or well-known person than Hamor. Now to us, we're reading it for the first time, so to both the names. Yeah, because he bought it not just from Shechem, he bought it from
all the kids,
right.
But only this one.
The kids had no significance.
Just
who, right? Who are they? They were. He doesn't say they were the brothers of Shechem. They were the sons of Hamor, and he in turn was the father of Shechem. So his significance was drawn from the fact that he was the father of Shechem. Shechem must have been a very important person, either very charismatic, very powerful.
Well,
somehow.
Is there any reference to him?
What's that?
Is there any reference to him that makes him outstanding?
Well, we're going to find that he's the one who molested Dina.
Oh, okay.
That's
going to
be the next.
All right. Is that what we're leading into?
What? Yeah, that's what we're leading into over here. But
does that make Shechem so important?
No. But we're going to show that Shechem, who's the one who's going to commit this dastardly
deed.
Is actually a very important person. He's not somebody off the street.
Okay.
He is what the city is all about. He stands for the city. The city stands for him. They have the same name. Everybody knows about this great person, Shechem. Maybe he was very wise. Maybe he was very strong. Maybe he was very talented, very charismatic, whatever it is. But this is the person that everybody rallies around. That's Shechem. Then, Yaakov built a Mizbeach, put up an altar, and he called it Kel Elokei Yisrael. Now, the name of the altar causes a lot of talk. On the name of this altar, because what all the commentaries, including Rashi, come to do is to explain to us that it sounds like he named it Kael, the God of Yisrael. So it sounds like he named the altar God. That's what it sounds like. He named the altar Kael, which is one of God's names. So how do you name an altar God? Isn't that Avodah Zarah? I mean, isn't that idolatry? Isn't that what the idolaters did? So how can Yaakov do that? So the commentaries all explain, he wasn't saying that this altar is God. What he was saying is when people see this altar, they should proclaim the name of God. They should remember God and all he has done. So why did he put up a Mizbeach? We find in other places that Avram built a Mizbeach here and Yitzchak built a Mizbeach there. Why did Yaakov build a Mizbeach over here in this place? We've had him build a Mizbeach before. He built a Mizbeach, if you'll recall, when he left, and when he left Israel the first time, and he came to Beis El. He built a Mizbeach over there. That was after his dream. Why did he build a Mizbeach over here?
If he bought the land and he had it pitched to his tent, he was going to be living there, wouldn't he want a place that was an altar?
Okay. So you're saying just he needed a place to worship.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But this is the first place that's returning back in Eretz Yisrael, Hashem took care for him and kept the promise to him that people shall protect him.
So it seems he put up this altar because of what the Torah told us. Because he came shalem, he came whole, complete, to the city of Shechem. So to commemorate that point, that to make it known and to thank God that I'm here and I'm whole and I'm fine, everything's good. I had this sojourn. I had my problems with Lavan. I had my problems with Esav. Thank God, all is good and fine. So he builds a Mizbeach. Yeah.
When you say he built an altar, are you saying like the stones?
Yes.
Boulders?
Yes.
And that's called an altar.
Well, he was made to bring sacrifices on it, to offer sacrifices to God.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So for the purpose of bringing sacrifices.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so this is the end of these few verses we just read are transitional verses from the episode of Esav leading into the very unfortunate and troubling episode with Dinah and Shechem, which is what we're about to begin. This is the backdrop against which the story begins with Dinah and Shechem. there seems to be a certain degree of closure over here. He has successfully overcome Laban. He has successfully overcome Esav. He left Israel penniless and without a family. He comes back with a large family, 4 wives, 11 sons, 1 daughter. Torah hasn't told us yet, but his wife is pregnant with Binyamin. And things look very, very bright. The birthright has been secured. He's now ready to assume the position in Eretz Yisrael that he needs to assume, and the children are going to now begin to grow into the Jewish people.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is it actually an end, or while he's building this mizbeach to thank Hashem, the actual abduction is going on while he's building?
No.
It's
afterwards.
It's
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The next thing is the next point in the story.
Why doesn't he just go home? What?
He's on his way.
I guess I would have thought he should have gone there.
Right away. Yeah. Okay.
Doesn't he? He bought some land, and he's on his way to some other place. So why did he buy this particular land?
He apparently understood the spiritual significance of this place, and now he is establishing himself there. Now, whether he intended to stay here or intended to move on to Yitzchak, it seems from later psukim that he wants to move on to Yitzchak. But it does seem that he wants to spend some time here.
But he didn't buy any other
right.
land.
That's right. So it seems like he wants to solidify his ownership, his purchase of this land. Now, with the story of Dina that we're about to begin, it's a very troubling story. As we know, Dina is going to be abducted and molested. And what we have to examine several points. We'll not be able to complete the story tonight. The best thing to do is to read a whole chunk of it, which we'll do, and point out the things that we have to talk about. But it's going to take us the balance of this week and next week to fully examine the story. In addition to Dina's being abducted and Yaakov's reaction to it, here we also have to understand her brother's reaction to it, which becomes a very important part of the story. So, as we read through, we have to examine that as well. Mm-hmm. So, the pasuk tells us, Vateitze Dina bas Leah, Dina the daughter of Leah went out, Asher Yaldel Yaakov, that she, Leah, had born to Yaakov, Liros Bivno Saretz, to see the daughters of the land. Dina went out to see the daughters of the land. Vayaro sa Shechem ben Chamor, Hachivi Nesi Haaretz, and Shechem ben Chamor, the Chivi, that's the nation he was from, the prince of the land, saw her. Vayikach Osa, he took her. Vayishkav Osa, and he lived with her, Vayyaneha, and he molested her. Vatidbak nafsho b'dina vas Yaakov, his soul attached itself to Dina, the daughter of Yaakov. Vayyahaves hanara, he loved the girl. Vayyidaber alev hanara, and he spoke on the heart of the girl. Vayomer Shechem al Chamor aviv lemor, and Shechem said to Chamor his father, saying, Kachli es hayadah hazos liyisha, take this girl for me as a wife. V'Yaakov shama ki timei es Dina vitel. Yaakov heard that he had defiled. Thank you, Dina, his daughter. Uvanav hayu es miknehu basadeh. His sons, Yaakov's sons, were with his flock in the field. V'hecharish Yaakov ad bo'am. Yaakov was quiet until they came. V'yetzei Chamor avi Shechem el Yaakov l'daber ito. Chamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Yaakov to speak with him. Uvnei Yaakov ba'u min asadeh kishamam. The sons of Yaakov came from the field when they heard. Vayis'atzevu ha'anashim. And the men were sad. Vayichar lahem ma'od. And they were very angry. The translation here is, they had indignation. They were deeply, right? Yeah. Ki nevala sabi Yisrael. For an abomination had been committed, an outrage, they say over here, had been committed in Israel. Mishkav espas Yaakov, to live with the daughter of Yaakov, v'chein lo yeyaseh, and such was not done. V'yidaber Chamor itam lemor, Chamor spoke to them, saying, Shechem bini, Shechem my son, chashka nafshal b'vitchem, his soul has desired your daughter. Tnuna osa lo liisha, give her now to him as a wife. V'yizchatnu osanu, you will marry with us. B'noseichem titnu lanu, your daughters you will give to us. V'es b'nosenu tikchu lachem, and our daughters you will take for yourselves. V'itanu teishevu, you will dwell with us. V'haaretz tialifneichem, the land shall be before you. Shevu uscharuha, dwell here and, how am I going to say it? Make business out of it. How do they say it?
Have trade in it.
Okay, have trade in it. This v'heya chazuva, and take hold of it. Vayomer Shechem al avi avel achel. Shechem said to her father and to her brothers, Emtzachin be'inechem, let me find favor in your eyes. V'ashatomu elai atein, whatever you say to me, I will give. Harbu alai ma'od moharu matan. Increase on me much moharu matan, which means a dowry. V'etna, and I'll give, kasha tomu elai, whatever you tell me. Usnuliya tanara leishan, give me the girl as a wife. Vayanu b'nei Yaakov es Shechem es chamor aviv b'mirma v'yedaberu. And the sons of Yaakov answered Shechem and Chamor, his father, with craftiness, and they spoke. Asher timei es Dina achasam, that he had defiled Dina, their sister. Vayomru aleim, they said to them, Lo nuchal lasos hadavar hazeh, we can't do this thing. Lasesis achosein elisha asher lo arlo, to give our sister to someone who has an arlo, who has not been circumcised. Ki cherpa hi lanu. For it is a shame to us. It is disgrace to us, embarrassment to us. Ach bezos neos lachem. But with this we will agree to you. Im tiu chamonu, if you will be like us, v'himol lachem kol zachar, to circumcise for yourselves all males. V'nosnu es benosenu lachem, we will give our daughters to you. V'es benosechem nikach lanu, and your daughters we will take for ourselves. Yashavnu itanu, we will dwell. Yashavnu itchem, we will dwell with you. V'ayinu le'amachad, and we will be as one nation. V'imlosi shmu eleinu lihimol, if you will not listen to us to circumcise. V'lakachnu es bitenu v'halachnu, we will take our daughter and we will go. V'yitvu divrehem b'enei chamor, and their words were good in the eyes of Chamor, uveinei Shechem ben Chamor, in the eyes of Shechem, the son of Chamor. The lad did not delay to do the thing. Ki chafetz bevas Yaakov, for he was interested in the daughter of Yaakov. V'hu nichbad mikol beis aviv, and he was honored from all the house of his father. And you have a reference to him being honored from all of them. V'yavol Chamor u'Shechem ben Oel Shar Yiram, and Chamor and Shechem his son came to the gate of their city. V'yidavru el anshe Yiram lemar, and they spoke to the people of the city, saying, Hanashim ayel, these people shleimim hei mitanu, they have peace with us. V'yashmu v'aretz, and they want to dwell on the land. V'yischaru asa, and they want to, what was the word? Do trade over here. V'aretz, and the land, hinei rachavas yadayim lifneim, it's wide open, it's got a wide hands, there's a lot of land before them. Es b'nosam mikach lanu menashim, their daughters, we will take for ourselves as wives. Es b'nosenu nitein lahem, and we will give our daughters to them. Ach b'zos yeosu lanu anashim, but with this, the men will agree Lashavas itanu, to dwell with us. Lios la'amachat, to be as one nation. Behimo lanu kol zachar, that all of our males should circumcise. Kasher hemi nimolim, just as they are circumcised. Miknehem v'kinyanam v'chol behemtam, their cattle and their possessions and all of their animals. Havalanu hem, they're all for us. Ach leos alahem, but we have to agree with them v'yeshvu itanu, and they will live with us. They'll dwell with us. Vayishmu al Chamor v'al Shechem b'no, and they listened to Chamor and to Shechem his son, kol yotzei shariro, all who went out the gate of the city. Vayimolu kol zachar, and they circumcised all males, kol yotzei shariro, all those who went out the gate of the city, which means all the people in the city. Vayihi vayom ha'shlishi b'yosam ko'avim, and it was on the third day when they were in pain. Vayikchu shnei v'nei Yaakov, Shimon v'Levi, achei Dina ish charbo, and the two sons of Yaakov, Shimon and Levi, the brothers of Dina, took each man his sword. Vayavo'u al ha'ir betach, and they came on the city sure of themselves, with confidence. Vayahargu kol zachar, and they killed every male. Ves chamor ves shechem beno, and chamor and shechem his son, hargu lefichar, they killed by the sword. Vayikhu es dina mibes shechem, and they took dina from the house of shechem, vayetzeyu, and they left. Bnei Yaakov ba'u al ha'chalolim, the sons of Yaakov came on the corpses. Vayavozu ha'ir, and they spoiled the city, they bespoiled the city, taking all the
plunder.
Plundered the city. Ashetimu achasam, that defiled their sister. es tzonam, es pekaram, es chamarehem, their sheep, their cattle, their donkeys, ve'es asher ba'ir, all that was in the city, ve'es asher ba'sad, and all that was in the field, ba'kol they took. Ves kol chelam, all their money, ves kol tapam, all their children, ves mishahem, and their wives, shavu, they took captive, vayavozu, and they plundered, ve'es kol asher ba'is, and all that was in the houses, they took everything. Ayomer Yaakov al Shimon ve'al Levi. Yaakov said to Shimon and Levi, achar temosi, you have, this is a hard word to translate, what do they say?
Discomposed me.
Okay. You've shaken me up. Lahavisheni biyosheva aretz. To, now this means to dry me out, but they say, making me odious. Okay? Amongst those who dwell in the land, v'aknani v'aprizi, the Canaanites and the Prizites. V'ani mesei mitzpor, I am just a few men. V'ne'asu alai v'yikuni, they will gather against me and they will strike me. V'nishmadati ani uveisi, and I and my household will be wiped out. V'yomru. Shimon and Levi responded, hachizona. Should he treat our sister like a zona, like a harlot? Should we allow him to treat our sister that way? Okay, that's the story. So, on the one hand, you look at it as Shimon and Levi gave them their just desserts. It's completely wiped out the city for what they did. Now, there are some very difficult points here in logic. Before we get to the actual issue of Dina going to see the daughters of the land and Shechem taking her and understanding Shechem. But just logically, if you follow the thread of what happens, it's very interesting. Shechem did a dastardly deed. He abducted a girl and he molested her. Now, when Shechem did that, Hamor then is dispatched to go speak to Yaakov. Not Shechem, but Hamor, his father, comes out to speak to Yaakov. And Hamor approaches Yaakov as if nothing happened. Hamor comes and he says,
my son belongs to you.
Yeah. Now, he's speaking to Yaakov and his sons. Yaakov was quiet until his sons came, which is also very important, that he waited for his sons to come home. Then Hamor says, my son, his soul desires your daughter. Give her to him as a wife. Like, no mention of what his son did. No mention of what had just happened. As if nothing happened. He's interested in your daughter. And we'll be able to marry each other, and you'll take our daughters, you'll give us your daughters, we'll be one big happy family, it'll be wonderful, you can dwell on the land, all good things.
Well, maybe that was an accepted practice in that particular tribe.
Okay. Shechem then says, Shechem the man himself, the one who did the deed, says, oh, you can increase the dowry, whatever you want, tell me whatever you want, gold, silver, I'll give you whatever it is you ask for, I'll give it to you for your daughter. Now, if you ask me that if you have one party that has clearly committed an act of aggression against the second party,
Rabbi.
Yes.
In English, it says they describe him as a prince,
mm-hmm.
and therefore he is at a higher elevation, and probably in their society he could do this.
Okay, that's what I was saying as well. Okay.
So this was, you know, from their aspect.
So he did what he wanted to do, but then he felt the need to come and placate the father and her brothers. It's one thing, you know, we had the precedent when Abraham and Sarah went to Mitzrayim. So Sarah was abducted.
Yes.
There was no, may I take her? And afterwards, Abraham, who they thought was her brother, got a lot of gifts because of it. It's coming up in this week's parasha on Lech Lecha. He got a lot of gifts because of it. We have it again when when Sarah is taken by Avimelech. And then later when Rivka was almost taken by Avimelech. So we have this, that the the princes seem to be to do as they please. But this is a follow-up. This is that after he takes her, I would understand if afterwards he would then come and say, you know what, your daughter's a wonderful lady, happy with your daughter. I'd like us now to make a treaty, and I'd like us to become one nation. You'll live here, we'll marry your daughters, you'll marry our daughters, we'll be all one big happy family. But that's not what they do. In addition to that, that is what they do, but in addition to that, they say, and please give me your daughter as a wife. Let me take your daughter as a wife. I'll give you a large dowry. If he was acting from a position of strength, that he is the king and he can do as he pleases, then he doesn't need to ask for her hand in marriage. He doesn't need to give a dowry. He took her already. She's there. She's in his house. So it's a funny thing that he ignores the fact that he took her already, yet he's asking politely for her hand in marriage. It's almost it's like a split personality. What do you want to say?
How do we know that Hamor knows what Shechem did exactly? It doesn't say that Shechem told his father that he raped her.
Well,
it says that. I mean, and we also don't know that Yaakov knows.
No, it says Yaakov. It says that Yaakov knows. I mean, it says they
Yaakov
knew.
Yaakov knows that he defiled her.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know. But that can mean a whole...
No, defile would, no, defile would mean that he molested her. That's what defile would mean over here.
He met...
That is the context.
But we know already from before that... what was it? Yaakov or Yitzchak isn't supposed to... That they're not supposed to marry from the daughters of the land. The idea of to defile doesn't have to mean to molest. It could just mean that she was with... That
what?
That they're mixing peoples here.
Does Yaakov know she was taken?
Yaakov knows she was taken, but he doesn't know that, or he might not know that she was raped.
What was he taken? She taken for?
Maybe to marry.
It was consensual.
No, not that. No, but that Yaakov. We don't know that Yaakov knows that she was raped, and we certainly don't know that Hamor knows because
the brothers know. The brothers know.
The brothers know that.
It says the men were very. Vayisatzvo and Hashem. Kinevalah sabi sol mishkaves bas Yaakov.
Mishkav, but not the last word.
Vayaneha. The Gemara says.
Doesn't know that.
The Gemara says vayaneha. Mishkav is already to molest her. Vayaneha is just an added molestation. Just the different things he did to her. I didn't want to get into details. But they're just two different words. One refers to the normal way, and one refers to an abnormal way.
One adds insult to injury.
Right. Yeah.
With Sarah, whether it was a Mitzrayim or whether Melech, he would have liked to have done that, but he didn't. Hashem wants to protect you. And then whenever he melts, he had his way.
Right. I'm saying it was obvious. If he took her, that's what he did to her. At least tried to.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that would be clear and obvious.
So why didn't Hashem protect Yitzchak?
Okay, good question. He did not give her protection the same way he protected Sarah.
He did not give protection.
Correct.
And why disappointing Yaakov's life does he have to have such a Sarah?
Okay, those are the things we have to discuss. Mm-hmm. I'm still working through the thread of the story, but we have to get back to that. Okay. That's true. Sure, yeah.
So does this prince know anything about her? Or it's just a coincidence that she was Yaakov's daughter? I mean, he could have had any kind of wife.
Did he know anything? Did he know who this woman, beautiful woman, was? I'm assuming she was a beautiful woman. It seems, it doesn't tell us, but we should assume so. Why did he pick her? She was really young. She was very young. She was relatively young. She was relatively young. She was relatively young. She was relatively young.
All over, right?
She went out by herself. In Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, it says, "Vatidavak nafsho b'dina bas Yaakov." His soul attached itself to Dina, the daughter of Yaakov. It seems that he was aware of the importance of Yaakov, and that she was his daughter. That was part of what he was interested in.
That's not
it. Yeah.
So he's just forcefully take her rather than ask first because that's what
it could be, but then it's a little bit funny that afterwards he's asking permission.
Right.
He's asking after he did it.
Scared?
What's that?
Did he get scared?
Well, we'll come back to your question. Let me just finish. Let me finish the thought through over here. He, on the one hand, he takes her with no thought to the consequences. Then all of a sudden, he's asking permission.
But he knew who she was.
Yeah, he knew who she was. Mm-hmm. Then he's asking permission. Then he asks permission. Now, in the asking permission, he says, let's make it one big happy family. I'll marry her and we'll be one happy family. It'll all be good. So when the brothers answer back, they say that, we're happy to become one big happy family, but only if you circumcise yourselves. If you don't do that, we can't. Can't mix with you guys. You're not like us. We can't do that. And if you don't agree, then, as it says in 17, if you don't listen to us, we will take our daughter and we will go. And what does that mean? Who's in control over here? She's in the house of Shechem. She's apparently being held against her will in the house of Shechem. And the brothers here say, well, we're calling the shots. You want to join with us? Fine. You have to circumcise yourselves. And if you don't do it, we'll take our daughter and we'll leave.
But your sister, not your daughter.
Okay, that's a different question. But what is this business? Who's the one making the terms over here? Who's making the...
The implication, at least, unless there's something else in here, is that he may have been prince, but he didn't have necessarily a army or people to defend him. He was weak. So that's it implies that he went and then made offers because of the strength of Jacob and his brothers.
I agree with you. If they're making you negotiate from a position of strength.
That's correct.
Correct. So if they're the ones making the terms, the brothers are the one dictating the terms, then it would seem that the brothers had the upper hand, or at least may have had the upper hand. Now, they weren't willing to attack Shechem until after they circumcised, and they were in the third day, and they were in pain. That's when the brothers took up arms and wiped them out.
You don't think the brothers intentionally did that?
Oh, yes, they certainly did. Oh, they certainly did. But before the circumcision, who was the stronger of the two? Was it Shechem, or was it the brothers?
It was the brothers.
But then why?
They had her.
Then why go through the circumcision? Just attack them.
If you're going to all of a sudden get revenge, you might as well weaken your enemy.
Okay, so you're saying it just hedges their bet. They really could have done it without that, but this is...
They probably could, but they may have lost more of their own lives.
Okay.
And if you're going to defeat your enemy through other means, you do that.
Okay.
One thing we didn't say anything about in this recap, it does say here that Shechem loved the maiden and appealed to the maiden's emotions.
Right.
And I'm wondering if that means that the Dinos
might have been convinced.
Might have been willing to be there with him.
When Shechem took her, so we could understand, and this is certainly the way this simple meaning is, that, and when people read things like this, they certainly think of it that way, that he saw her and he was overcome with her beauty and his desire for her, and he took her. He certainly did something which was, you'll excuse the expression, which was stupid. I mean, he did a dumb thing. If he is really in a position of weakness, if he's not dealing with a powerful force, which we see later he did not have a powerful force, because otherwise he could dictate the terms. If the brothers are dictating the terms, that means that at least it's an even bet who's going to win this battle. So that means that he did something which was not very smart. Now, people do things that are not very smart for various reasons. Sometimes they're not smart. That's one reason. Another reason is because they are overcome with desire or emotion or anger or whatever it is, and they act out of those desires rather than out of intelligence. And that could have been what happened over here. The thing is, And although you could say that, it is unusual and unlikely that a prince, who, as was mentioned before, could take whichever maiden he wishes, would all of a sudden become enamored with some strange girl and do something which was very, very, which was not very smart. You could say it, but it's a little bit funny, because he did something which threatened his whole city, which threatens his whole status, which threatens his whole power, and he did it without thinking. And although it's possible that he was just overcome, but people like that have whatever they want. It's hard to go there. Let's
Rabbi, when you're in this particular period, if you have a status as being a prince or a king, you don't think about all of these other things. They are the whole community take whatever you want.
I agree with you, as long as you're dealing from a position of strength. You don't take what you want from the neighboring country, which maybe have a more powerful army than you do.
All rulers are not smart.
Okay. So that's possible.
I've got one right now.
Okay.
Why would he have thought that Jacob's clan family are so strong?
I don't know, but I do know that in the end, they're letting them dictate the terms.
But they have some problems.
The story here is in general what we see in Deuteronomy. No, that if a man will find a virgin maiden who was not betrothed and takes hold of her and lies with her, and they are discovered, then the man who lay with her shall give the father of the girl 50 silver shekels, and he has to marry her, and they can't get divorced. So could it be
he can't divorce her? She can.
Right.
She can.
But could it be that Hamor knows that this is what Yaakov might possibly should
okay.
do?
Okay. Okay. So hold on to that thought.
When you talk about Yaakov preparing to meet Esav, he had some army. Yaakov had
well, his own
what
sons
about
were.
Now?
Yeah.
No, not only sons. He had some army.
I don't know if he had an army. He certainly had people with him.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now also he had some people who helped him. Mm-hmm. He was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, one more. Go ahead.
In the end, Jacob says that, you know, I am few in number, and should they band together and attack me, I will be annihilated. So they were not that strong in number. And I think that Shechem, you know, he felt he could do whatever he wants, and although he did like this girl, and she may have been agreeable at the moment, and then the father decides, well, he was stupid, he shouldn't have done it, and it may cause some problems with Jacob's family. So he goes to Jacob and he talks to him in an appeasing way, so that maybe Jacob and the sons will not be angry.
Okay.
And then I think maybe Shem really loved her and really wanted her and really wanted to do right by her and make an honest woman out of her.
Okay, so Hamor the father is afraid of retribution over here.
Mm-hmm. And also wanting to do the right thing.
Okay. We have to move on, but sorry, you had your arm up before.
Just real quickly. Yeah. Did they have to abide by the Noahide law?
Yes.
Is this morality here? They really violate?
Yes. Okay, so what you're bringing up is, and I meant to point this out, that when the verse says in Pasuk Zion, verse 7, that the brothers came from the field when they heard about this, and they were very troubled, they were angered, they were deep with indignation, because an abomination was done amongst Israel, or in Israel, to live with the daughter of Yaakov. V'chein lo ya'aseh, such was not done. Now what does it mean, such was not done? What does that mean? If you have a country, and it's been around for 100 years, and there's a certain law in the country, then you can say, this is not done in this country. We don't, or as we say to our children, we don't act this way in our house. Right? So you, if you have a precedent, you can say that. There's no precedent. What do you mean this was not done?
It was their standards.
So who's standard? Right, who's standard?
Their standard.
Right. So the Mefarshim Serashi explains over here, such was not done by the non-Jews. Immorality of this nature was banned ever since the flood. Since the flood, the major reason for the flood was immorality. The nations of the world, they were just Noah and his sons, when they emerged from the table from the ark, they agreed not to engage in immorality, which is why, and I explained this to you when we learned about Avram and Sarah, that Avram was afraid, and this coming from Sparsha Lech Lecha. Remember, Avram says to Sarah, say that you're my sister, don't say you're my wife, because if you say you're my wife, they will kill me and take you. So I asked you at the time, why do they have to kill Avram? Just take Sarah. If they're powerful enough to kill him, then they're powerful enough to take her, so what do you have to kill him for? Just kill, take her and say to him, see ya. Right? Why kill him? The answer is, because murder they would do, but adultery they would not. They would not take her without killing him, because that's immoral. And the nations of the world were extra careful with immorality after the flood. They would not take her if she was a married woman. They had no problem killing him and taking her.
That's immoral.
I mean immorality with relationships.
Right.
They had no problem taking her against her will. But taking her while she was married, we got to kill him first. So here also, this was not done. Just going around and grabbing a girl, that just wasn't done. And therefore, it was something which was beyond a dastardly deed. It was something which was doing something which was outside the realm of what society accepted. It seems to me that what is going on over here, and this will tie some of the loose ends together, is that Shechem was a very intelligent person. And he was not acting here out of desire or stupidity or just, you know, whatever other impulses that he would have. Shechem was very calculated. Shechem was interested in the daughter of Yaakov. Here you have Yaakov and his family is here. They already, their name preceded them. They are the princely family, the great family of Yaakov. They are the ones who are supposed to eventually get the land of Israel. Shechem saw a way to link up with that eternity, with the eternity of the Jewish people. Shechem said, the way we can link up with this great people is to marry into them. He would love to marry Dinah. If Shechem marries Dinah, Shechem becomes part of the Jewish people. Dinah was an interesting phenomena, because people have asked this before. This is before the Torah was given. How did you become Jewish before the Torah was given? We know that today we have conversion. How did you become Jewish before the Torah was given? The answer is, there was no such thing as conversion before the Torah was given. Before the Torah was given, we were not a nation. We were a family. You can't just become someone else's family. I can't just change my last name and all of a sudden, I can become someone else's. I can't just name myself Wittenberg, and now I'm a Wittenberg. It doesn't work that way. How do you join a family?
Marrying
into the family. So before the Torah was given, if you married into the Jewish people, you became a Jewish. You became part of, not you didn't become Jewish. You became part of the family of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. You are now part of that legacy. Once the Torah is given, now there are restrictions who can marry whom. But on the other hand, so you can't have intermarriage, but on the other hand, you can have conversion, because you can join the nation. You don't have to be a direct descendant. You can join the nation. Shechem, Dinah is the only girl available. They're all boys. Now we know that there's a medrash that the brothers had twin sisters. There's a dispute about what, if that's true, what happened to them. So we're not going to focus on them right now. But Dinah we know about. Dinah was, someone had to marry Dinah. Now, whatever man would marry Dinah would be thrown into this family. So Shechem said, that's a great idea. But Shechem knew he wouldn't cut it. Can you imagine? Can you imagine not just passing the faher, passing the test of Yaakov, but he's got to pass the test of the 11 brothers. And forget it. He'll never make it. So Shechem saw an opportunity. Dinah made herself available. We'll discuss that next week. But she did. And Shechem saw a great opportunity. If I take her and I live with her, then I will be dealing from a position of strength. Not because he's physically more powerful than the children of Yaakov. Okay. He feared the children of Yaakov. But he'll be dealing from a position of strength because what are you going to do with Dina now? No one's going to marry her now. Now she's been molested. No one's going to want her. So now he's trying to hedge his side. He's trying to take the upper hand. If he has already lived with her, now they have a good reason to accept him. Say, look, you know, Shechem, we weren't really interested in you in the first place. All right, well, what can we do? We'll just have to go with you right now. That's what he was looking for. That was the in that he was hoping to have. And so after he commits the deed, it wasn't a secret. It was known by everybody. That's exactly what he wanted. He made it clear that this is what he had done. And now he's hoping the default will be that Dina will remain with him, and that will create a camaraderie between the Yaakov family and the Shechem city, the Shechem city state family, whatever you're going to call those people. And then they will be all one group, and they will be able to grab on to that eternity which has been guaranteed to Yaakov and to his family. That's what he wants.
How did he know about it? Well, let's see.
About that eternity?
Yes.
It was not a secret. This is something, as we'll see, when Yaakov says that you have, what was the word at the end of the parasha? It says you have, you have discomposed me, right? Discomposed me, right? The Medrash says that those living in the land knew that eventually they would be given over in the hands of the children of Yaakov. They knew that eventually they were going to lose the land to Yaakov's sons. But it didn't trouble them, because they figured it's going to be many years down the line. It's like, you know, you know, when all the sun is going to burn out in a couple thousand years. All right, don't worry about it then. You know, it's not something people are going to get so crazy about now. That's the way they treated the whole thing. Yaakov is saying to his sons, because of what you did, you've brought it all into the fore, because you wiped out a whole nation, a whole city. Now they're going to be scared of us. Now they really are afraid. They might gang up and attack us now, all the nations who live in Israel. And so this is what Shechem is trying to set up. And now that he has given himself the upper hand, now is when he wants to negotiate. He feels he now has a position of strength. And now they come to the children of Yaakov and they say, okay, let's become one big happy family. It's interesting that Yaakov seems to have a difference of opinion with his sons about how to deal with Shechem. Because the sons say, go through this business of circumcision, because if you don't, we're going to take Dina and we're going to leave. Apparently they could have. They could have taken Dina and left.
You don't see any discussion. Was there body language? I mean, what was going on? There was no discussion.
Yaakov was quiet. Apparently Yaakov felt, we'll talk about this more next week, I hope, if I remember, Yaakov felt that it was not his place anymore to act unilaterally. When he dealt with Lavan, he was the one calling the shots. He dealt with Esav, he's the one calling the shots. Now, once we have crossed into Eretz Yisrael, he has built the altar, as I said to you, there's a certain closure over there, we now have entered a new stage of existence for the Jewish people. Yaakov will not act unilaterally. Yaakov needs the input and maybe even the leadership of his sons. There's a new order in the family of Yaakov. Next week, Mr. Shem, we'll talk about it further.
How old are they, the sons?
They're not that old.
Yes, they're very young.
Yeah.
Very
Yaakov young. Only started to have children.
Yes, out of 20 years.
22 years.
So 7 years with Lavan. How long did he travel?
He married Leah and Rachel 15 years before this story.
Yes.
So the children, now Shem and Levi are two of the oldest, but they are, they're young.
Very young.
13 and 12, something like that.
Yes.
They're young.
12 years old.
They're very, very strong. They're very powerful. We see that throughout the Chumash, that the tribes are very, very powerful.
Yeah. Abraham didn't seem to No, with Ishmael. He never saw really what the child was like. Yitzhak had the same thing with his boys. And now it seems like Yaakov, and you're saying it's a new chapter, he gives up.
He doesn't give up. He understands this is the right thing to do. Once they have entered Eretz Yisrael and they've established themselves in Eretz Yisrael, he's still the father, and he's not giving up authority. He has a lot of input still.
Yep.
But he understands that when something happens to Dina, he understands that it's the brothers who have to call the shots.
So then why is he so upset for what they did?
Because he disagrees with what they did. He doesn't stop them. He doesn't stop them. But he still feels they were wrong for what they did. We have to discuss. So what would he have done?
Right. Does it say?
Is there
a midrash on what he would
do? Let's talk about this for a second. We can go on all night with this. But before anybody leaves...